Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Patient-Focused Update from Americans for Safe Access. Visit the website at safeaccessnow.org. I'm Russ Belville, and joining us from Americans for Safe Access, we have Dr. Jehan Marcu, who's the Chief Science Officer for the organization, David Mangone, the Policy Advisor for the organization, and Debbie Shergai, who is the Executive Assistant to the Director of the organization. Welcome, all three of you, to the program today.
Thank you, Russ.
Thank you.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Let's start with Dr. Marcu. There are all sorts of things happening. We're getting into fall now where the conference schedule and events are beginning to take place. Can you give us an update on some of Americans for Safe Access and the events they'll be participating in this fall?
Great. So coming up next week, we'll be at the Cannabis Science Conference in Portland. We'll have a booth there. We're also giving a presentation on the endocannabinoid system. So if you're going to be in Portland next week, come by, say hello. We also have two things that you can sign up for if you're in the cannabis industry. If you go to safeaccessnow.org/event, we're actually doing inspection preparedness assessments. So similar to a law enforcement training, but how to be prepared for your cannabis inspection. We've been working with a lot of regulators to develop their checklists and train their assessors and inspectors, and we're gearing up to offer this to cannabis industry folks so they can sign up now. We're also doing a in-person and online live training that will be in Philadelphia at the law offices of Offutt Kermit, and folks can go to safeaccessnow.org and sign up for that training. Whether or not you live in Philadelphia, it doesn't matter. You can watch it remotely. And those are the three main events coming up. At the end of September, we'll be at the International Association for Cannabinoids as Medicine meeting. I'm on the board of directors of the organization, which is a clinical cannabis-focused conference. So it's really one of the only places you can go to and actually get real research, real clinical updates about what people are doing around the world.
Fantastic. And we can get more information on these from the ASA website, I assume?
Yes. And I think there's one unique thing that we're doing for the first time in Philly that I think people will be really interested in is a cannabis extraction 101 training. And this is actually going to be focused not on how to make the best product, but how to do that safely. And so what are the ins and outs? What do people need to know when making a decision about what method of extraction to choose from? What are the pluses and minuses? What cannabinoids and terpenes are preferentially extracted in those methods, but most of all, how to make safe products and how to keep the people who are making them safe. And I think that's going to be one of our unique offerings in Philadelphia. So if people want to watch that online, it's going to be sort of a free add-on for that course.
That's fantastic news. All right, let's get to some updates on licensing. When we last spoke, we were looking at the state of Maryland and how they were moving forward with their medical cannabis program. And I was hoping perhaps, Debbie, you've got some news for us on Maryland.
Yes. Last week, the Maryland Medical Cannabis Commission announced the approval of 8 more companies. There was only one previously approved before this, so 8 more companies to grow and some of them also to process medical cannabis in Maryland. And 3 of those companies were also PFC, that's our patient-focused certification program, certified. Dr. Jehan Marcu is also our PFC director. And Harvest of Maryland, Free State Wellness, and Greenleaf Medical are the 3 cultivators that got licensed that are part of our PFC program. We also expanded some of our services this year to help these businesses make it through the licensing process. So we started doing these inspection preparedness assessments, and those organizations went through our inspection preparedness assessment. And part of that includes we did a mock inspection, we checked their SOPs, we reviewed state inspection checklists with them. We went over things inspectors may be looking for, including the most common violations that often result in fines. We gave them a suggestive corrective action report and a post-audit debrief. So we were excited to have this Maryland, the program finally getting up and running. A year ago, 15 licenses were approved for the stage one, and now we have 9 cultivators that were approved for stage two, which means they're now ready to have product in and can actually start growing. So it's very exciting for the patients of Maryland who have been waiting almost 4 years for this medicine.
That's excellent news. Now, I know in covering the state of Maryland, there had been some concerns over the licensing with respect to African Americans trying to get into the industry. Do these new licenses address that issue any?
So I think one of the things that isn't covered by the media is that there actually are a lot of minorities working at these facilities. I personally have done inspections on, have been a part of inspections for at least half a dozen of the operations. I have to tell you that the staff that are actually on the ground, there doesn't appear to be a diversity issue when you actually go to these places and see who's working there. But, you know, a lot of them are owned by rich white guys. So that's something that'll have to maybe get worked out on a different, that might be beyond the scope of what PFC can do.
Right.
But definitely, I have to say that they are hiring locally. And it's really good to see. I think if you really want to see what the future of the cannabis industry looks like, you got to come to the East Coast. There's a lot of diversity at these places where people are working at, and I've met a lot of them.
Fantastic. All right, let's get to some other fantastic news for our nation's veterans who have long been trying to access medical cannabis for post-traumatic stress, for war injuries, both physical and mental. David, can you give us an update on what's happening at the federal level for our veterans?
Sure. Actually, this morning at the American Legion's conference, they adopted a resolution that called for Veterans Administration doctors to be allowed to discuss cannabis with their veteran patients. There's still currently a policy directive in place from 2016 that basically restricts VA doctors from even discussing, let alone recommending cannabis with their patients. So this move by the American Legion definitely signifies a friendly amount of support from one of the nation's largest veteran groups in terms of giving veterans access to the cannabis that they need for a variety of medical conditions. So I will say this isn't the first time the American Legion has acted on this. Last year at the same conference, they published a resolution calling to reschedule cannabis to at least recognize the medical value. So based on the large amount of veterans that are involved in the American Legion, it's over 2 million, and President Trump's support of the organization, in fact, just yesterday he retweeted some of the information that the American Legion had put out, this certainly is a great step in getting veterans the cannabis they need. And I think this will be echoed when we get back with Congress, with the Senate Veterans Equal Access Amendment. What this resolution does is it really shows that there's a lot of support and powerful support from a significant veterans organization behind an amendment like Vets Equal Access. So it's really good news to come out from the American Legion today.
Yeah, that's great news. Let's hope it translates into political action from the administration. And we're keeping an eye on what has been called the Rohrabacher Amendment to protect the medical cannabis states. We know that has to be re-upped every year. Can you give us an update on that?
Sure. The amendment itself, there's more and more support congressional-wise. It's one of the most bipartisan amendments. It has one of the most amounts of co-sponsors of any amendments to be proposed. So right now, the big challenge is getting it past the Rules Committee, which is led by Representative Pete Sessions. But I think once you get over that hurdle, the support is there in Congress to maintain these protections that have been in place since 2014. Something somewhat related to the Rohrabacher-Farr Amendment is Representative Rohrabacher, along with Representative Gates, Representative Polis and Representative Blumenhauer, yesterday sent a letter to the Department of Justice basically asking why the DOJ has prevented applications for research for medical cannabis from moving forward. Not that they've denied or approved any, but there's been about 25 applications since August of 2016 for various research purposes that haven't received any action. So a Washington Post article last week had sort of hinted that DOJ was refusing to act, And these representatives had sent a letter basically asking if that was true, and if it was true, the reason for their inaction. So it should be interesting to see if the Department of Justice responds to this letter before the appropriations process starts. Because I know, in addition to patients being protected under the Robacher-Farr Amendment, there's lots of researchers who are interested in how the appropriations process is going to shake out as well.
All right. Well, we will hope for the best on all these fronts. We want to thank David Mangone, Debbie Shergai, and Jehan Marku for joining us today. Is there anything else we should leave our listeners with, Jehan, before we go?
Absolutely. I would like to just brag for a moment. Americans for Safe Access and Ethan Russo have just released a book chapter in a new textbook called Cannabis Pharmacology, and it's online right now. You can find it at the usual internet search suspects like PubMed, but it's called Cannabis Pharmacology, The Usual Suspects, and A Few Promising Leads, and the lead authors are Ethan Russo and myself. And what this covers is some of the stuff we know already about the major cannabinoids, but it goes into a lot of the lesser-known terpenes, such as osamine, guaiol, and a couple other terpene tongue twisters that are a little difficult to pronounce. But we also, you know, the interesting thing about osamine that Ethan Roos and I uncovered is that law enforcement is, for example, using it to train honeybees to detect drugs in packages. And we also go over a lot of cannabis odds and ends, discussing the nutritional compounds found in roots, some of those alkaloids, what's in the leaves, as well as not only what's coating the seeds of cannabis that's good, as well as those little sprouts that appear when you see seedlings appear. Those have their own unique compounds and profiles. And so we definitely covered the usual suspects, but we gave more attention to some things that are lesser reported on in the cannabis plant. And that just came out, I believe. It's been released now. The book officially goes to print the first week of September.
Wow. I look forward to perusing that publication. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Patient Focus Update from Americans for Safe Access. Make sure to check out the website at safeaccessnow.org. And have yourselves a great day. Thanks for being here.